Welcome to Medically Speaking, Auburn's own medical radio show with host Dr. Mark Vaughn of the Auburn Medical Group and Larry Finney.
And here we are, Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney. Medically Speaking Radio, our premier maiden voyage.
Yeah, when you say maiden voyage, I imagine myself standing on the bow out there with Kate Winslet saying, I'm the king of the world. I have no idea what's coming.
Okay, tell you a little bit about ourselves. My name is Dr. Mark Vaughn. Both Larry and myself are from Auburn here in the foothills, and I grew up here, went to Alta Vista School, Rock Creek, Forest Lake, Evie Kane, graduated from Placer in 1988, went on to Sierra College, and then got my education, graduating from St. Louis University School of Medicine in 1996, doing residency at UMKC in Missouri, Truman Hospital, finishing up emergency medicine residency in 1999 and getting certified by the American Board of Emergency Medicine. Since then, I've practiced in Auburn, now 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Almost 8 years in primary care and 4 years here with Auburn Medical Group, where I'm the owner and the medical director. So that kind of tells you who I am and why I can talk about medical topics. Larry, tell us about yourself.
Well, man, I got nothing to match that. I'm just a local Auburn guy. I was born here in this town, Highland General Hospital. Went to Alta Vista, like yourself, and went to E.B. Kane. Graduate of Placer High School, class of 73. Y'all can do the math. Went on to Sierra College, CSUS. Got a degree in accounting, became a CPA. Currently work for the state of California. And having lived in Auburn all my life, I live in Auburn all my life, and I have nothing to tell you except that it is the cultural center of the universe. Well, I've traveled other places, I've been to plenty of other places, but Auburn is the cultural center of the universe.
After my 7 years in Missouri, I'd have to agree with that.
Quite so. You know, I may slip up from time to time and call you Mark.
On the air?
On the air, because we've been friends for a while. But I will try to engage in the discipline. You say you want to be called, referred to as Dr. Vaughn. So I will refer to you as Dr. Vaughn. But I only ask that you give me the same courtesy, and you will refer to me as senator and not man. All right? Well, those of you out here listening to our maiden voyage, you're in for a treat, I hope. Many more of you out there will claim you were there on this day, kind of like boomers from my generation.
That's right. Everybody says they were at Woodstock.
They were at Woodstock. Yeah. Oh, I was there when Hendrix went on. We say that. We always there when Larry and Mark, or excuse me, Dr. Vaughn.
Yes, ma'am. Senator.
Okay.
Should we tell the listeners what we're going to do today? We're going to be going over a little bit of medical news. We try to make it as local as we can. If we don't necessarily have local news from in the medical world, we'll go ahead and tell you about things more general, national or world health-related news. Then we're going to get into some actual topics. We'll open up the phones a little bit later on, and we can talk maybe a little bit about the president's speech on health care. And it's a very interesting article in the New Yorker. If you guys have time and you're on our website, which is medicallyspeakingradio.com, you can actually look at our notes page and see the article I'm talking about by Dr. Gawande. It was out of the New Yorker. That may spark a little bit of discussion. That's a pretty interesting article. Then we may get into speaking a little bit about summertime activities. We start to prepare for West Nile virus, and we can talk a little bit about that since that's a medical topic pertinent to summertime in the foothills. And we'll also be able to talk about summertime sports, specifically some combat simulation sports, airsoft, paintball, and laser tag, and the health aspects of those different activities.
And maybe talk about a little heat illness, if
time allows.
All right.
Yeah, and we don't know. We won't be on the air next week, week of the Western States.
Talking about heat illness.
That would really go along with that. But since we're talking about not being here next week, we will be back July 11th for real. That's when we're going to start doing this on a weekly basis. Still working out the details and the time slots and the sponsors. Sponsors, please call, please email. And moving on to the news. I thought it'd be good to do a little update of the H1N1 flu virus. The update from yesterday said that in the United States, there were 21,449 cases with 87 deaths. Now that brings up, you can do the math, but comes out to a mortality rate of somewhere around 0.7%. So still, we're talking, this is not a real virulent influenza. It's pretty normal. In California, 1,245 cases and 8 deaths. And thankfully, it's not any worse than that. It looks like we're just going to sit and wait, hopefully get a vaccine. I believe that the decision on that was going to be made in the next week. I believe the decision will be made if we're going to have a vaccine against it.
So this is not really a scary thing then?
Well, we'll see what happens with the vaccine. You know, it can change between now and then. The virus itself can mutate. But if it stays the way it is and they get a vaccine in time for fall, I think we're going to be okay.
Okay, well, then I just needlessly spent a lot of money on a plastic bubble then, huh?
No, you can still use that. Do you have air holes in it?
Yeah.
No, never mind. Okay, and then moving on to items out of Reader's Digest. The July 1st Reader's Digest had some information for people. Now, if you are having trouble paying for prescription drugs right now that your doctor is prescribing you, or if you're having trouble keeping your COBRA insurance, there are a couple of links on our website I want you to be aware of. One of them is for pparx.org. That's pparx.org. This is one of those consortiums of drug companies and I think it's just drug companies as far as I know, coming together and having a mechanism through which patients can get discounted name brand medicines. If you have to have some kind of a name brand medicine and it's not made in generic, go ahead and go to our website at medicallyspeakingradio.com and then click on the notes page and you'll be able to find pparx.org. There's a link to that. And then the COBRA insurance.
Wait a minute. I was at COBRA insurance. Here in the foothills, I would think that we'd probably be more concerned with rattlesnake insurance.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are no COBRAs here.
Okay. Well, should we change the name of it?
Well, I don't know. You might want to explain what COBRA insurance is.
Okay. Well, I was thinking that anybody that has it would know what it is. COBRA is when you had insurance through your employer and you changed jobs or you got promoted to unemployed. And then you have to continue your insurance through a plan called COBRA. And that's where you have to pay out of pocket to continue the plan you had through your employer. There's a phone number for calling the Department of Labor to get information on how you can actually get that reduced. And that's through the American Recovery and Renewal Act of 2009, or the stimulus bill. Some money was put aside for that. The phone number is 1-866-444-3272. I'll do that again for you in case you're writing that down. 866-444-3272. Again, it's also on the internet at dol.gov.
And what else do we have? I see here in the news that we also have that Nestle has recalled its Toll House cookie dough products for fear of E. coli infection.
E. coli was in it. It didn't say specifically that it was the really bad E. coli, which is typeable. They do a test on it, on the proteins on it, tell what type it is. The really bad one was the one that was in the, was it Jack in the Box in the Pacific Northwest that had the hemolytic uremic syndrome, caused them to have the bloody diarrhea and they die from it.
Well, this one particularly concerns me because raw cookie dough is one of those things that I just don't feel like I can give up. When the E. coli scare affected spinach, I had no problem staying away from spinach. I'd stay away from spinach all day long. But, you know, you can have my cookie dough when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. I am going to eat that raw cookie dough. In fact, what would be wrong with doing make-your-own raw cookie dough? My lovely daughter, Lauren, is constantly engaging in that particular activity. Is there a danger there inherent?
The concern is that something's not getting cooked and may be contaminated with something. Now, it's usually not E. coli. E. coli somehow got into this Nestle product, and they're telling people, even if you cook it, don't use it. And here's the reason. They say you might cross-contaminate your kitchen with it before you cook it and therefore introduce this bacteria into your kitchen. So they're kind of covering themselves by saying, don't even cook it and eat it. But with raw cookie dough, usually the concern is not so much E. coli as salmonella, which causes a very similar infection in your gastrointestinal tract and can also cause a bloody diarrhea.
That doesn't sound like any kind of fun at all.
Yeah, I wasn't sure I should say that on the air. But
well,
it's a medical show.
It's too late. It's been said. You can't put that back in the tube.
Okay.
Although it did say that the product with the raw cookie dough that's entrained in the vanilla ice cream is unaffected.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's different. Maybe a different factory.
Well, do them.
Preparation.
It's simple at-home remedy. All you'd have to do, let's say you have some of this cookie dough at home. You go to Baskin-Robbins, you buy a quart of vanilla ice cream, mix the two together, problem solved.
Okay, time for the disclaimer.
I would think so.
I need to...
Oh, the doctor's looking up the disclaimer.
No. Trevor's telling me that it is after 15, after the hour, and we are scheduled to have a break. So let's go ahead and break for that. We would like to let you guys know if you are wanting to talk to us about any of the topics we've brought up or about the sports we talked about, the combat simulation sports or West Nile virus. The phone number is written somewhere, 885-3565, and that's here in the foothills. Now to you, Trevor.
If you would like to speak to our hosts about today's topics, please call 530-885-3565. That's 530-885-3565. We will return to Medically Speaking with Dr. Vaughn and Larry Finney after these messages on K-High, the voice of the foothills. Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Welcome back to Medically Speaking here on the voice of the foothills, K-High, K-A-H-I, AM 950. We're glad to be with you. This is Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney. We wanted to go over our disclaimer since Larry was already giving advice on cookie dough that was making me really nervous. So we want to let you know that the Medically Speaking radio show is meant for entertainment, for general information. We don't want to pretend that we're establishing a doctor-patient relationship over the air. We're not attempting that. We're not implying that, either on the air or on our website. Any medical advice or remedies, all other medical information on this show, should not be used as a substitute for your own advice from your doctor. So don't attempt any treatment mentioned on the show or the website without consulting your own doctor. Always consult your own doctor if any way you're concerned about your health. If you need a doctor and you live around Placer County, call Jen at 530-886-8630 and schedule an appointment. Come in and see us at the Auburn Medical Group. If you have a medical emergency, please call 911. We are not responsible for any diagnosis or treatment made by anyone based on the information that's content on this show or this website. In addition, the views and opinions expressed on the show, our guests on the show, or our co-host, or anything linked on the website is not necessarily the opinion of Dr. Mark Vaughn, K-High Radio, or the Auburn Medical Group, or even of Larry Finney.
Well, now, see, he has to say that because he's a doctor, but me, you know, if you call me and say, it hurts when I bend my elbow, I'm going to say, well, stop bending your elbow.
Stop bending.
Or I'm going to diagnose it as probably, well, it's Shanghai elbow. Even though the place has been closed for a while, that's what it is. It's an overuse syndrome. 12-ounce curls give you pain
now,
in the elbow.
Now, that's an Auburn-specific medical topic.
It is.
Shanghai elbow.
Yeah, well, we may talk about that someday.
Can they come after us for that, even though it's closed?
No, they probably, you know, wipe a tear of nostalgia away from the eye.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we were talking a little bit about the H1N1 flu virus, and we would like to talk to Mark on the phone. Mark, what were you wanting to ask or say about the H1N1 virus?
Good morning. Good afternoon, gentlemen, I should say.
Yes, good morning.
Or I should say doctor and gentlemen.
Or ma'am, or senator.
Senator.
I was listening to the reports on the national news, I guess, about the swine flu, and I recall them talking about in the pandemic of the early 1900s, that's, I guess, pretty well known, it was suggested that in that historical event, there was actually a period of months where it subsided and then came back very strong in the next season. What is the relative risk of that? And then my other question, a little off the swine flu, is have you evaluated the statistical risks medically of driving up and down Highway 49 every day in Auburn?
That's one I use all the time clinically in my office people ask me how dangerous something is, and I ask them, did you take 49 to get here today? Anyway, Mark, you wanted to know about the 1919, the World War One swine flu that was called the Spanish flu. Actually came out of, I think, a pig farm in Kansas is where they narrowed it down to, I once read. What happened there was you had the a late flu, kind of like we had with this swine flu late in the year, as far as the flu season goes, and then it came back with a vengeance during World War One, when you had lots of soldiers in close contact, not the best hygiene or health situation, spread all over Europe and even came back to America. We think that that's a concern also with this, because when flu season hits, it's not because the virus likes a particular temperature or climate or palm trees or whatever. It happens when people are in close proximity to each other because they're coming indoors. That's why it's spreading in schools and military camps, places where you have lots of people in close contact.
Prisons.
Oh, yeah, yeah, prisons. So we could theoretically see that happen in October, November, December, when it has a chance to come back. Right now, what we're seeing is the numbers declining in the northern hemisphere while it's rising in the southern hemisphere. So we're actually seeing it kind of drift off here. As far as statistics compared to driving on Highway 49, I would hope that the mortality rate of driving 49 from my house to work is less than 0.7%, but I don't know the numbers. Anyway, Mark?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Did Joy also have a question?
No, Joy, so that we don't get the swine flu, we haven't been together for several days. So, but she's listening on the radio, I believe, okay. Driving the rest of our family on errands.
Okay. It's always good to hear from you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks,
good luck,
Mark.
To the show. I think it'll be good for the Auburn area.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
And the greater Foothill area.
And the greater Foothill area. Yes, the sound waves are not limited by city limits.
Right.
Okay, also in the news, since we took our break in the middle of the news, the over-the-counter cold remedy product called Zicam got some bad press in the FDA's website. Again, if you want to see the specific site, just go to medicallyspeakingradio.com and go to the notes page, and you'll see a little link there for the FDA's comment on Zicam that mentions that they're telling people not to use the Zicam gel or swab. Apparently, this is a swab you stick in your nose. The problem is people are losing their sense of smell, sometimes permanently. I guess, how would you know it's permanently?
You'd never be able to smell a rose ever again.
Yeah, but they'd have to wait till, you know, person dies, I guess, to say it was permanent. What if it came back when they were in their 80s and they did it in their 30s?
Yeah, so when you go get a job at a sewage treatment plant, I guess.
Hey! Oh, hey, they were actually talking about it being bad for people's jobs, people who are cooking or having
you could
to
work on a pig farm.
But, yeah, maybe it's just, like we said before, a promotion.
There you go.
Anyway, they discourage people from using products like that anyway for what we call a self-limiting condition, like a cold. There's tons of these over-the-counter products for supposedly getting your cold away earlier or taking care of it or people thinking they need antibiotics for the cold. It's a self-limited illness. It's going to go away. Don't put yourself at risk for some kind of side effects by taking something for it. Also in the news, acetaminophen, the name for Tylenol, the chemical name for Tylenol, and NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. That's your ibuprofen, Motrin, Naprosyn, Naproxen. There's going to be some new warnings put on those. On the Tylenol or the acetaminophen, it's going to say that you could have severe liver damage occur if you take more than the maximum daily dosage units within a 24-hour period, or if you take it with other drugs that also contain acetaminophen, or if you consume 3 or more alcoholic drinks per day. So that's kind of one of those interactions with Shanghai Elbow.
Exactly. And what would be the required or the minimum daily or maximum daily dosage of, say, your acetaminophen?
Of acetaminophen?
Yeah.
I knew you were going to ask something like that.
Yeah.
4,000 milligrams a day.
Which is like how many pills?
Well, if you're taking the extra strength that comes in 500 milligrams, you can take 2 of those every 6 hours. That's the maximum. And you can take that, and you're fine, as long as you're not pounding down the drinks. You know, so your liver's at risk from that. You're going to be fine taking 4,000 milligrams of Tylenol a day, spread out throughout the day as you're supposed to, for some kind of acute pain that you're having or fever that you can treat with it. But if you're doing it for a long-term problem, if you're taking the medicine all the time because you're always having, you know, pain, like from arthritis, they recommend that you limit it down to 3,000 milligrams a day. I sort of don't like this because I have a lot of patients that I'll recommend that they use Tylenol because it is an effective pain reducer, by the generic name acetaminophen. I'm not necessarily promoting a name brand here. And they say, oh, but that's bad for your liver. No. It's not bad for normal livers at the normal dose. It's a very safe medicine at the normal dose. It's when people just take way too much. Okay, it looks like we have a call. So we'll go ahead and take Coach Lane's call. No, we don't have Coach Lane's call. Oh, he called in and made a request that we say what you can do with the cookie dough we were talking about earlier. I think Larry's suggestion kind of covered that.
Yeah, you just mix it with vanilla ice cream.
Again, the official warning would say not to do what Larry's suggesting.
Okay,
because
throw it out. Fine, you got me.
Well,
throw it out. Make your own cookie dough.
Well, there's the answer. Okay. Also on the warnings, NSAIDs, the warning on those is for the potential risk for severe stomach bleeding. And again, also the problem with the liver if you're taking three or more alcoholic drinks per day. Also not mentioned in this warning they're putting out is severe problems with kidneys that these drugs will have. I have had a patient come to the Mercy Department with kidney failure, and the only thing we could find that he was taking that could have caused it was ibuprofen that he used on a fairly normal basis, never had a problem before. So that, to me, is the scarier of the two drugs.
So why the push for the warning labels?
The push for the warning labels comes because they put Tylenol in everything. They make sleep products, and like Tylenol PM is one of them. There's many others that have acetaminophen in with maybe some kind of antihistamine like Benadryl to help you sleep at night. The idea being if you help the pain, it's a little easier to sleep. And people will buy these as a sleep aid when they don't even hurt. And then when they hurt, they'll take some Tylenol on top of it. And if you do this for long enough, you can actually cause some damage to your liver. So that's why they made the warning for that. And then for the NSAIDs, just because there weren't enough warnings about the stomach irritation. Do you want to go ahead and jump into the... We could go ahead and start this and then take calls after the break. What we're going to do is talk a little bit about the president's health care reform speech to the American Medical Association, where he gave out a lot of generalities but not really specifics. He's kind of going around with the Congress right now about how that's going to work out, and we're actually finally having some substance to the debate in terms of are we actually going to have a public option or not. A senator from North Dakota suggested some kind of a cooperative effort where there is a private component to the public insurance side of it. Of course, the AMA was fighting him on that. And then there's also that Gawande article in the New Yorker. If anybody was able to get a hold of that and read that, again, you can find it on our notes on medicallyspeakingradio.com. We're going to come back. We'll go ahead and talk a little bit about that. We will take calls at 885-3565 after this break that's coming up right now. We look forward to talking to you after the break.
Medically Speaking Radio is still lining up sponsors for its official start in July. If your business wants to reach the thousands of listeners who will be enjoying this show weekly, please go to medicallyspeakingradio.com. Click on the sponsors link to learn what is included with the sponsorship. Use the email address on the contact link at medicallyspeakingradio.com to tell us of your interest. Again, that's medicallyspeakingradio.com. The doctor would say, don't stick anything in your ear. Unless, of course, it's medically speaking. On K-High, the voice of the foothills.
Welcome back from the break. Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney with you. I'm talking over our announcer. Sorry about that, Gary. Okay. So we wanted to talk a little bit about what the president had said. He's talking about taking away waste from the system. He's talking about making adjustments to make it more affordable. In the face of this, there was a very interesting article related to the whole health care cost debate by a Dr. Gawande that was in the New Yorker. He went down to the city in Texas, I believe it's called McAllen, Texas, very close to El Paso. You take the area around McAllen, the area around El Paso, and they're very similar communities. they have kind of the same makeup of people, same makeup of immigrants, both illegal and legal, same health status and similar economic status of both towns. They're both very close to the Rio Grande, close to the border there. But this one town, each person, when it's averaged out, each person that has Medicare, about twice as much money is spent on their health care compared to the people in the next area. And the medical systems there were investigated by this Dr. Kawandi. He went down and interviewed people in the hospitals. He interviewed doctors, primary care doctors, specialists, home health agency directors, anybody who was connected with the health system. Went through, goes through this whole long article. I don't want to ruin the whole article. I don't want to be a spoiler, but you know, this is the radio show, and we want to give you some real information.
Hmm. Want to save you some time, too.
Well, yeah, so you don't have to read the whole thing. But if you're going to read it, go ahead and plug your ears now and then read the article later. But
spoiler alert. Huh?
Yeah, what it comes down to, though, is that there's profiteering going on in this town, that the doctors sometimes, I believe the article says, were getting kickbacks in the hundreds of thousands of dollars from the hospitals for them to send their patients to them. And then, of course, the way the hospital is able to do this is because they order every test in the book on every patient. And the Gawande article was great in that it shows how that's not in someone's best interest to be ordering all these tests. He goes over the complications of the test and the further questions that they raise, the fact that there's not enough positive results to justify it so that you have to chase down all these false positives. And then the even things like home health agencies. One of the home health agency directors said that the doctors would just simply not send patients to her home health or have her home health agency treat the patients unless they got some kind of a kickback. Bring this home to Auburn. I spoke with a specialist this week who would just really not want me to say their name. I'm not even going to say the gender. Who told me that they had experienced a primary care physician implying to them that if they wanted referrals from this primary care physician, they'd have to make it worth their while financially right here in Auburn. So that practice is not limited just to McAllen, Texas, and there certainly are other areas of the country where this is going on. And if we can kind of get a culture of medicine to move away from that and more toward models like we see in like the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, for example, we'd be able to get better care for less money. We do want to go over some summer fun topics, starting out with the, I guess you'd call them combat simulation sports. Paintball, airsoft, laser tag. I think this is appropriate to talk about with Larry. Larry, you like to go to the range and use...
Well, in my I'm pretty much limited to live ammunition, so we,
okay.
We're very careful about where that goes.
Well, this is very different from that. We consider it safer for teens to do these instead of the live ammunition, although there are some health issues at play with the paintball and airsoft sports. I did a little bit of research on this, finding that we find in paintball that there is medical literature abounding with accounts of injuries, particularly to the eyes, with the paintball.
Yeah, both of my sons were way into paintball. And so I think what we're about to talk about here are paintball and airsoft-specific injuries. In other words, pulled muscles and scrapes and contusions and things like that are part and parcel of any...
And that's actually
physical activity.
That's probably most of what you get from these sports.
Right.
Yeah.
But what you intend to talk about is probably the trauma of being struck by the... And I've had a few paintball welts on me myself.
Yeah.
They're very interesting. Makes a very interesting bruise pattern.
Yeah. The little clearing in the center.
Yeah,
with
clearing the center with
bruise
a
in the circle around. Yeah. Had plenty of them.
Mm-hmm.
The eyes, though, what they found was that paintball injuries... There were a significant number of injuries so severe that they actually had a globe rupture of the eyeball itself, and damage to the back of the eye, whereas in airsoft, you don't find those kind of injuries. They're more anterior injuries, like a hyphema, which is where you have, it's actually an air fluid level you can see over the colored portion of the eye, the iris. So you have a little blood there that is flat across the top. It will absorb. The problem, though, is later in life, these people will have elevated intraocular pressure, glaucoma. So not a good thing. there was that one study that was done that I had read about where they took cadaver eyes. That would be eyes from a dead body. They also did it with pigs, porcine eyes. Shot them at various ranges. No, not various ranges. They were all within 17 centimeters or about 7 inches from the eye. But they did it at various speeds and with different weights of airsoft BBs. And they found that the paintball would rupture it. They found that the airsoft could rupture it at regular airsoft speeds. But with people playing with the faster guns in the sport of airsoft, getting up to 600 feet per second sometimes, I'm not so sure what's going to happen there. Bottom line being, wear your goggles,
wear
face
mask.
Yeah. Keep your barrel covers on whenever you're not on the field playing. Keep your magazine out when you're not on the field playing. Dry shoot to get those last BBs out before you leave the field. People do that, they'll be fine with their airsoft. So that brings us to laser tag, which, you know what? I couldn't find any laser tag specific injuries. No eye injuries. Unless, of course, you tried to poke your eye out with the laser tagger, I guess.
We mustn't confuse this, the laser used in laser tag, with some of the more high intensity lasers.
It's not even a laser. It's just a name. Yeah, it's infrared beam, like in your remote control. Okay. So we do have a giveaway today.
And what would that be?
That would be, let me pull it out here. It would be the Bio-UD, or do you pronounce it Bio-UD, insect repellent from Bite Blocker, a company called Homs, H-O-M-S. They sent us a variety pack of insect repellents, and the reason they did is because we were going to be talking about West Nile virus and its prevention. And the reason I talked to this company about their product was because when I was going across the literature, I actually saw in a medical textbook description of this product as one of the natural or botanical solutions to insect repellents. Usually they tell you to use the DEET, D-E-E-T, because it's very effective. And they want people to use something effective and not get blood-borne illnesses from mosquitoes. Well, the studies that were done found that this bite blocker was actually pretty good stuff compared against the DEET. They found that, read it here, I have it in front of me. Over 97% protection against a particular species of mosquitoes under field conditions, even after 3.5 hours after the application. Whereas if you use 6.65% DEET, it was only 86%. So that's 97% for this botanical compared to 86%. I do have to point out, though, that strength of DEET, I don't even see it. You go to the store and see what percentage DEET, you're finding 30, 40, 50%. A lot stronger than what they compared this against. But yes, but they did find that it was effective. And in fact, in one test, they found that when they were testing it against biting black flies, I don't know if we have those here. Do we have biting flies around here?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not those big ones like you see in the Midwest. Anyway, they found that the bite blocker gave you about 10 hours of protection against those, when a 20% DEET only gave you protection for about 6.5 hours. So, you know, I've always been kind of hesitant to endorse or support the use of the botanical or the natural insect repellent. But this stuff actually looks like it somewhat does the job. And so if you have a hang up about using the chemicals, because they do have some concerns for some toxicity if it's left on too long or if it's real strong or if you mix it with a sunblock, this is something that might be worth looking into, the bite blocker. But this one that we have in front of us, the Bio-UD or Bio-UD, insect repellent spray. It has a different ingredient than the regular bite blocker. So I cannot say anything about the effectiveness of this because I cannot find the ingredient. Even when I did some research through some medical sources, it has an ingredient called undecanone.
I think that says unknown.
Maybe that's what it is.
It's an unknown ingredient.
Yeah. So we're going to give this away to anyone who can give me a link on the internet telling me what undecanone is. So if you can, go ahead and call the studio here at 885-3565. If you can tell me what this is, you can have it.
You might want to spell undecanone.
You know, that would be nice if I would do that. I'm even wearing the glasses and I'm trying to read it here. UNDECANONE. Actually, it's a 2- undecanone. 2- UNDECANONE. E.
Could you use it in a sentence? And what is its language of origin? Now,
I could use it in a sentence, but I can't say that on the air.
I just got done watching the spelling bee. So tell us about West Nile virus, a little bit of its history and why we should be afraid. Or should we be afraid?
I knew you were going to ask that. In 2008, we had 15 fatalities in California.
No, wait, how many?
15.
In 2008, 15, 1-5.
Last year.
Okay.
Yeah. And 445 cases. Now, a certain number of those cases are going to be severe, maybe less than 1%.
And how many cases right here in the foothills?
Well, I don't know specifically in Placer County. I do know that we had no fatalities, though. Oh, I'm sorry. We did have 6 cases, but no fatalities. 6 cases that we tested for. So it was here. People were affected. People got sick. They got better. The really bad cases go on to encephalitis or meningitis and, you know, really severe. They get killed. There is no specific treatment for it, though. It's just supportive care. So if you get sick enough that you need to be in the hospital, they take care of you until you get better. But there is no antiviral for the West Nile virus. The treatment is prevention. And so that's why we talk about it, so that we can not have to talk about it.
Well, and so how do we prevent?
Using repellent, effective repellents. We talked a little bit about the bite blocker being the biological alternative to DEET. There's actually another alternative to DEET that looks to be as effective, if not better, and safer. It's called picaridin or picaridin. How do you spell that? PICARIDIN. Picaridin? Anyway, that's the one that seems to be the way to go now. It's being endorsed by bodies like the World Health Organization because it doesn't have the neurologic toxicity problems that the DEET had. It was actually implicated in the whole Gulf War syndrome question. You know, was it because all these guys were being sprayed with bug repellent? And so a lot of the people, the manufacturing things like the bite blocker, if you look at their website, they're saying possibly implicated DEET, possibly indicated with the Gulf War syndrome. They're probably carrying a bit far. I think it probably had to do with some other stronger repellents that they were using on their clothes and such rather than the DEET itself.
Well, and one other obvious thing that we can do right here in Placer County is to eliminate the mosquitoes' habitat.
Yes. Get rid of the standing water.
Yeah, we have little wading pools and standing water. Yeah. We have water features around our homes. I remember, and I don't remember which agency it was, what mosquito abatement district or whatever, but came around a few years ago and gave out free mosquito fish.
Yes, that's actually the Placer County Vector Control District, and they want us to look at the website for, it's called fightthebite.gov, I believe. You can go to that website, or I think we're linked to it on our notes page, aren't we? I can check for that. Anyway, they have a 1-800 number for reporting dead birds also, because that's how they track it. 1-877-968-2473. We have that on the website. And, the mosquito fish are free. Get them from the Placer County Vector Control District. Call back after the break. The number is 885-3565 if you want to talk about West Nile virus. If you can tell us anything about undecanone, you can actually win this BioUD insect repellent. Again, the number is 885-3565. And here we are at K-High, the voice of the foothills.
Medically Speaking Radio is still lining up sponsors for its official start in July. If your business wants to reach the thousands of listeners who will be enjoying this show weekly, please go to medicallyspeakingradio.com. Click on the sponsors link to learn what is included with the sponsorship. Use the email address on the contact link at medicallyspeakingradio.com to tell us of your interest. Again, that's medicallyspeakingradio.com. The doctor would say, don't stick anything in your ear. Unless, of course, it's Medically Speaking. On K-High, the voice of the foothills. Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Thank you, Gary. We're glad to be back. It was pointed out to me that we need to go over the symptoms of West Nile virus, which, unfortunately, they are so vague and so general, these constitutional symptoms, that it's the same thing as all the other...
Swine flu?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's fatigue, fever, headache, difficulty concentrating, and then with that difficulty concentrating get worse? You're concerned that it could going into encephalitis or
meningitis. That happens to me every time I eat cookie dough.
We'll have you over for some baked cookies sometime.
Okay.
Baked really thoroughly, you know, hard. The other thing I wanted to talk about also was that so many people talk about the Avon product Skin So Soft. You've heard of that? I know you've heard of that. That supposedly keeps away the bugs. I was always told to use it for the chiggers when I was in Arkansas. Those things, they'll stay with you forever. It takes a long time to get rid of those. You ever had one?
Never.
It's like a little red dot under your skin, and they itch intensely. Okay, so the Avon Skin So Soft, that was also tested against the bite blocker product, and they found that it gave 40% protection rather than a 97% protection. So it's just, yeah, maybe it gives you a little bit of protection, but it's just not there. You need to use something that works.
So in looking at this whole West Nile thing, I ran across a website. It's westnile.ca.gov. And they give a little, like an interactive map that shows the latest West Nile virus activity in California. Updated fairly recently, as of June 17th, and I happen to notice that there are just zero activity here in the foothills. But they talk about horses, dead birds, and sentinel chickens. And I looked at this thing, sentinel chickens, and I'm thinking to myself, is this like a chicken armed with an M16, or what is it? So after doing a little research on this, I've discovered that a sentinel chicken is kind of like the canary in the coal mine. They stake these chickens out.
Do the chickens have large talons?
They do, Napoleon, they do. And when the chickens pick up the disease, their immune systems promptly crush it, creating antibodies. Now, the only way to know this is to draw a blood sample from the chicken. And I was going to ask you, sir, have you ever drawn a blood sample from a chicken?
I haven't. I understand they use different chairs rather than the regular phlebotomy chairs that you see at the Quest Lab.
And you strap their little wings down to the, Velcro their wing
down.
They
get orange juice before and after.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can't have a lightheaded chicken.
No, you have them lay down for a while.
Yeah. But No sentinel chicken activity here in foothills.
How do you sign up your chicken to be a sentinel chicken?
I don't know. I don't think they get paid, though. You know, it's not worth it. It's one of those terrible jobs.
Do they let roosters do it?
I would imagine so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's strictly a volunteer kind of thing.
Okay. We have something related to heat illness coming up this summer in a week.
That would be the Western States 100-mile race.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, it's one of the premier events here in the foothills that gives Auburn its nickname of Endurance Capital of the World. But they've been running this for, I couldn't even tell you how long. But
well, ever since Gordy Ainsley, for whatever reason, couldn't finish the Tevis Cup with his horse.
Yeah, and this thing draws contestants from all over the world and virtually every state in the union. And, you know, one of the things that we're concerned with, obviously, is endurance runners is... heat exhaustion.
Well, certainly this year. I'm a little concerned about it because, you know, we have weather like this coming into it when the people are training for it. And if they're training here locally where they're actually going to run it, they're not going to be acclimated to the kind of heat that possibly we could have on June, what is it, 27th?
Works out to be.
If we have the normal kind of weather that we usually have on a June 27th, then this is what they've been training in, they could actually have problems. The human body's interesting. When you're acclimating to the heat, the sweat actually changes as you get more acclimated. As you're exercising out in the heat more, the sodium concentration in the sweat goes down. And so these people are going to be losing more sodium. Easy enough to replace. We've got those electrolyte-containing energy drinks that have the sodium in them. So as long as they keep using those, not overdoing it, you know, your body can only absorb so much at a time, somewhere a little bit more than about a liter per hour. Should be able to do all right.
So what are the symptoms? How can a runner or anyone else is working out in their yard or a construction worker or road worker working out in the heat heed the warning signs? How do they know when this is coming on? Or by the time they're symptomatic, is it too late?
There's a lot of that to it, about it being too late. One of the worst things about it is euphoria can be one of the symptoms. It's not a painful condition. It actually sort of feels good when you're getting overheated. And so people don't stop. What they need to look out for, though, are if they're getting so hot that they actually feel their body is hot, it's time to take a break, cool off, get a drink, cool down, get in the shade, take some clothing items off that are appropriate depending on your company. The
that's a different euphoria.
Now you really threw me off.
I'm sorry to do that.
The other symptoms. Oh, yeah, like if you were to have your sweating stop.
Oh, in other words, it's very hot,
or your goosebumps.
And you have stopped sweating.
Yeah.
It's 100 degrees and you've stopped sweating. You got a problem.
Yeah, mental confusion, which, again, that's always a problem because when the person's confused, they don't recognize the problem. It takes people around them to say, you're acting goofy. Let me take you. Take them, grab them, get them in get them the shade, have them stop working, have them stop running, whatever they're doing. Get them cooled off. Good method for cooling them off is to douse them with water and fan them and make sure they're in the shade. If they have a hat, take it off. Now, if they're playing airsoft, don't take their mask off out in the field.
No. Well, you know, I've done some running in my time here in Auburn, including acting as a pacer for the Western States, and run a few marathons. And one of the things that has always beset me, especially in marathons, is leg cramps.
Yes. Yeah, so-called heat cramps, even though it's not actually because of heat temperature in the tissues. It's just because when you get hot, you have this problem of the sodium concentration going down, and it's usually happens after the exertion. In fact, oftentimes they document that it's in the shower that happens. The person exercises, they cool down, and then they're taking a shower. A cramp.
No, mine were always ironic. They were within view of the finish line.
You were running?
And so, yes, and so severe that I had to pull over within sight of the finish line.
Oh, that's disappointing.
No, tell me. Yeah. And this is not on a particularly hot day. Now, I would imagine then it's not the air temperature that creates that.
It's a problem of your body cooling you. And when you're exercising, you're generating heat. And your generation of the heat exceeds your body's ability to dissipate that heat. And you probably weren't drinking enough fluids. But actually, that contributes to a certain extent because you're diluting the sodium. So that's why they put all the sodium in the sports drinks.
Okay, so when it comes to hydrating, you can it's possible to go overboard.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. In two ways. One, if you drink just water and you're already losing sodium and you dilute your sodium even more, then you can have a problem with low sodium. And then if you are drinking more than about a liter per hour, there's different estimates. Some say a liter per hour. Some say 1.8 liters per hour. You're not absorbing that. All you're doing is distending the stomach. So that's nauseating. It makes you want to throw up. That's not helpful at all. It also stimulates the release of ADH, which worsens the sodium situation. It's a hormone, antidiuretic hormone.
Okay. Well, so much of what we talked about today, to wrap it up, is shall we say common sense? Wear eye protection?
Well, for some people, yeah.
Yeah, wear eye protection when you're playing paintball or airsoft. If you're working out in the heat, hydrate. Watch what you're doing. Dump out those mosquito breeding ponds where you can.
Yes.
And put vanilla ice cream in with your raw cookie dough.
Please.
All right.
We're not even gonna get sponsors because they're gonna be scared of you.
No. I take it all back. I take back everything I said about the raw cookie dough. You know, if there's a warning label on it, if it has...
In our last minute here, I just want to say that we're going to be here this summer, starting in July. We'll be here on Saturdays at K-High, the voice of the foothills. Go ahead and be ready to call in with your comments or questions related to our medical issues. And sponsors, please contact us. Look at our website at medicallyspeakingradio.com. We'd love to have you join the team and be a part of this way of getting good information, medical information, to the listeners in the Foothill area, and doing it in a way that's palatable. Thanks again for listening.